Fabrice, I think you are with us now.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
So welcome. Welcome to the Arsenal Supporters Trust, Fabrice. We are, you know, a membership organisation that kind of follows the club and works with the club and stuff like that. And we always like to bring guests who can not only talk about football, but can talk about their own experiences. And of course, we will get into yours. And obviously, we will talk about that day and how that's kind of changed football a little bit in the country as well. But before we sort of get into all that, I just wanted to know when you were growing up, when was that moment when you thought I'm going to be a footballer or I want to be a footballer?
I mean, for me, to be able to say that I was able to play for Arsenal, it's a huge privilege and honor. Obviously, the dream was to be able to say I play football, but to be able to actually say that I played 2 games for the first team. I was part of the Champions League squad against Barcelona. To live most kids' childhood dream to be involved and play in the Premier League and in the Championship, regardless of what happened to me in 2012, I don't have no regret. I think for me, I live most kids' dream and I enjoy every single day life has to offer. I'm a big fan of football. I watch football from every angle, from young players to old, and I'm a supporter. So I don't have no qualm, no regret about my journey regarding to football. I've just, you know, it's just unfortunate. It took a different direction that I didn't have no control of.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little while. But when you were sort of young, how was it growing up and how did you kind of find that journey when you were very young? I'm talking 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Well, I was born in the Congo. So, you know, I didn't come to England until I was 12. Even when I was back then, it wasn't really like I want to become a footballer. It was just I want to play football. And it was just for the recreation of it, for just to enjoy being around my friends. And to be able to, when I came to England, and to see how much, you know, the English people love football and how much passion you have towards the game. And for me, I was like, I want to be involved in this. I want to be part of it. You know, and to be given the opportunity to play in the Premier League was something that I made the most of it. Obviously, just to be a part of the Arsenal Academy alone was a dream come true because it was something that I never thought I'd be able to do in my life. But for me, football was just a way to just enjoy myself. I never thought I'd become a footballer one day, just to enjoy it.
Yeah. And what are your sort of early memories of Arsenal, you know, the academy, obviously you said, you know, all that. I mean, what do you remember and what was special about it?
You know, the funny also is question because when I first started, it was at Highland.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months ago, my son, who's a Man City, they went to play Arsenal. They played to play at Highland. So for me to go back there, and to bring my son, I said, listen, this is where it started for me.
Like a whole circle, done the circle.
This has become a whole circle to me. So, Highland for me was a place that I enjoy most of the time. You know, I used to go there because my parents live about 5 minutes from Highland. So I'll go there most of the time and practice on my game. I spend more time in there, you know, just to be able to improve because I was a latecomer in the academy. So I had to be able to stay as long as you can to touch the ball as much as I can to improve all parts of my game. And, the Arsenal, when I was there, Liam Brady was our academy manager. Again, he was more about technique. And technically, I wasn't good. So I had to come back in and practice, you know. So for me, Helen always brings so much memory for me.
Yeah, and how different was it, the Arsenal way, compared to what anything else you were used to?
I mean, what stood out for me when we played against other teams was we were just technically good. But however, the spine of the team was big, strong and fast. That just like you see the top team now, the Man City, the Liverpool, you know, the spine of the team from our goalkeeper, the 2 centre-back, the midfield, and the striker, we were very, very tall, very strong. And technically, we were sound, you know. And I think that's how the game hasn't changed much. But it's just that we had a presence about us. We didn't like Spurs. We didn't like Chelsea. We went about business. We knew that when we play against Spurs, we have to win. that was ingrained from us from like being in the academy anyway. So, you know, and I said, I don't think that has changed. I hope it hasn't changed, but it was something that you learned from very young age.
And were there any sort of players you played with at Arsenal in the academy that you knew straight away that boy is going to be a player?
It's when I became a scholar, when Cesc came, he came and he trained with us just one day. That's it. He trained on a Monday with us. That was the last time we saw Cesc. He just went straight to the first team. That's how much like how good Cesc was. And obviously I had Nicholas with us. Nicholas obviously they brought in. Nicholas was trained with us and trained the first team. He also was there. Quincy was 2 years above me, but Quincy
very
was
skillful, very skillful.
I always said he's arguably the most talented individual I've seen through Arsenal book. That's including Robin, including Kolo, including everybody that's come through that door. Quincy is probably the one that I wish people can see his talent. He was literally everything you want from a talent player. Quincy had it. You know, it's fun. What a footballer. What a footballer.
Were there players there also that you thought they're going to be great, but they just didn't make it? And were there any sort of players you felt, he should have made it?
I say this because he's my mate, Nicholas. Nicholas, if Nick could have just humbled himself a little bit and work a little bit harder, he had everything you could ask for. Everything you want for a striker, tall, he's able to control the ball, he's able to head the ball, he's skillful, he's quick in mark, and just Nicholas was just Nicholas, you know, it was everybody else and Nicholas time.
Yeah, obviously you mean Nicholas Bentner, just for anyone who was wondering who you meant. Of course, he was a character.
He's a top boy, absolutely. Yeah. You couldn't ask for a better teammate to be with you.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, it would drive you up on the wall. You're like, come on, Nick, I need you. Like, come on, you know. But it's a top lad.
So are you still in touch with any of the
boys? Oh yeah, we still have our group in, you know, and we still the year that I go in as a scholar, we still much stay in touch with everybody. So Nicholas, Johan, Ryan Smith, Alex Song, Diaby, Mark Howard, Kerry Gilbert, Matthew Connolly, and Anthony Stokes. So, you know, Arturo Lupoli. So, we had a very decent group.
Yeah, just in that, you see the level of players. Some did really well, you know, played for the country. Some maybe, you know, played less. But it's still just, it's amazing to hear those names, actually. All right, I am going to take you back now to that day. I think it was March, wasn't it? It was mid-March.
Yeah.
2008, I think it was, obviously, at White Hart Lane, which, I mean, again, you just said it. You mentioned them already, that we did like Spurs and stuff. So I'm even sure as a ex-Arsenal boy, you always had an extra motivation when you played Tottenham. But, I mean, what are your memories from, not when it happened, from before that game? Do you remember that day? Do you remember waking up that morning? Do you remember going to Spurs?
Like, you remember traveling to the game and have a look around at the pitch and everything else. I remember us going, arriving to the stadium, have a look around, saw my dad's ticket. And then, you know, as I said, prior to that, I said many times, I never had no symptom, no sign whatsoever, nothing at all. It was normal business as usual. We started a game, and I think I missed an opportunity to score. I mean, I think the game was still 1-1. But however, if I was standing in front of somebody, I would see them double, so my vision become very blurry. So I couldn't really see somebody like one person. It's one person, but there's another person next to that person. But it's still one person, and out of nowhere, literally was not far from the halfway line, I just fell down, hit the ground. That was the last time I was able to play the game. Even when I've seen picture of me being taken up and being put in an ambulance, I wasn't aware of that at all. I'm not aware of what's happening, because I was literally out and out, done and dusted, really.
When you said you could see double and stuff,
Yeah.
Do you feel now you might have had some time to actually think something's happening here, let me stop, or it just happened too quickly and you weren't in control?
It happened so quick that I kept going back. I didn't, I said, if somebody was in front of me, I can just see blurry, I just become blurry with the two of them. And then they're just trying to control myself. And it just, I couldn't, I didn't know. Because the pain was internal, you can't really put your hands on it and to hold yourself up. So it's one of those things where it's like, I just have to let go and hope for the best. I said, I was fortunate enough that it couldn't happen in any better place than a football stadium. Now, to be able to have two doctors, a cardiologist, an ambulance, everybody that needed to be there present were there, and they did an amazing job. And they just were able to get me from where I needed to be to the hospital and hoping for the best. And I think it turned out to be great for everybody.
It was 2012, actually, not 2008, wasn't it? It was 12 years ago. And then what are your memories like? What's your first memory when you kind of came back to life a little bit? When what did you know what had happened? Did you think, hang on, I was playing a football game? What's or did you just like, how was it
It's
afterwards?
almost like I was in disbelief that it happened. And I was like, really? Like when I spoke to my wife, then when she asked me, said, oh, this is what happened, I was like, what, it really, really happened to me? Because obviously being young and fit and everything else, you're thinking you're almost untouchable, like you can't, not this thing will never happen to you. But it was like I was in very much in disbelief. I couldn't believe that happened to me. And it took me a while to get my head around it, to be able to accept the fact that, yeah, this is it for me. Like, I might not come back and play again. But the first reaction was I was in shock and I was in disbelief that it happened to me.
And when that sort of, what were the next couple of weeks like for you? Was it, did you instantly think, oh my God, am I going to play football again? Or was it a case of actually just trying to get back to walking, trying to get back to normal life, trying to just
No, you know what? It first was that I need to get my kidney working because my kidney stopped working at the same time. So it took us 3 weeks prior to when I had an accident to when my kidney kicked in. And from there, you're like, okay, what's the next step? You're hoping that this is going to happen. And you start seeing specialists and other people coming in and giving advice about what could happen, what's the next step. But it was always, I'm gonna go home, get some rest, more exam, and then hoping to come back into play football. But as time goes on, you realize how se the severity of the whole situation was. And for me, it was just, I'm just hoping that for me, just to be able to be in that presence and be able to be alive and anything else, I couldn't ask anymore. But I was hoping that I'll come back and play. But after we did a lot of exam, a lot of testing, I think it was probably the best decision for me to remove myself from the situation. I think even though it hurt, however, it was for the best decision that I could make because obviously now I'm still able to play with my children. I was able to do a lot of things because in reality, if you look at it, if somebody's out for 78 minutes, they should be in a very difficult circumstance. So for me, I would take that not to be able to play football, but to be around my children. So yeah.
Do you remember the day when it dawned on you're not going to play again? Do you remember that day?
Yeah.
That
I think
moment?
it was a Friday when I was told by the doctor that this is it. I don't think you should come back and play. It took me probably like 2 weeks to get my head around it. And I said, I've announced my retirement, and that was it. That was just back to normal. But what I found very difficult was that I couldn't go watch a game. I couldn't actually go to the stadium and watch a
You mean
game
just
because I felt
mentally,
like,
you just weren't ready?
yeah. Even when I go to watch a game, what I find very difficult, when you have a group of guys, when they play a lineup to shake hands, I couldn't watch that part. I couldn't. So what I used to do, I would wait to kick off, then I go find my seat and I sit down. Beside that, I would never, all the pre-warm up and stuff. Nah, that was hard to watch.
Have you ever watched the game back? Because obviously the broadcasters and stuff wouldn't show it again. They don't show replays or things like that. Obviously you could.
But I've watched it, yeah, I've watched it. And I was in actually in disbelief that it was me that happened to him.
Yeah. You sort of feel that's not me. You sort of feel it's not you there.
Yeah, because you're like, there's no way. No way, that's me. There's no way. Even when I was falling down, everything else, I was almost definitely in disbelief.
And then, I mean, obviously, you said there's no better place for it to happen than football. But did you then, after maybe a year or so after, when you've kind of recovered a little bit, did you then look to try and change football? Did you look to try and see, actually, I want to not stop it happening for people, because you don't know. But did you try and, has football changed a bit since that incident? Have we become?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, there was a lot of stuff that the Premier League has put into places. Yeah. You know, it's like, for example, they need to have two doctors on the touchline in every game. And we need that access from the tunnel has to be empty. And if a player has found himself in that situation again, literally that hallway needs to be as empty as possible as you can, so you can get a player from A to B as soon as possible. There's another aspect that obviously you have two doctors from two clubs. The ambulance is almost 10 seconds from me. And just educate people more and make sure that players know how to do CPR, learn about cardiac arrest, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. It must be tough. By the way, just talking to members who are watching, if you do have questions, please do put them in the Q&A. If you want to put your hand up, I'm happy to bring you in as well. We can try and make this a bit of an open discussion and stuff like that. And then your family at the time, you mentioned your wife then and stuff. Yeah. I mean, how was it for them? You probably don't know really that the real, because you were obviously within your own battle. But have you spoken to your wife since? Well, you must have spoken to your wife since. But
yeah, obviously, we've had a conversation. So when it happened, my son was watching the game.
How old was he at the time?
Joshua was Joshua was about.
How old is he now?
Joshua is 15 now.
He was about three.
Yeah, so he kind of know exactly a little bit, but he's. He's the only one that's seen me play football out of all my children.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he kind of knew a little bit what happened, because even when I was in the hospital, he only came to see me once.
Yeah.
I didn't want him to be around all that kind of stuff. So he kind of a little bit know what happened. But the kids, are aware what happened to me, and I explained to them. And obviously with her, she didn't know what happened, because once that happened, she had to take the train from Manchester to London.
She wasn't on the ground.
She wasn't, no, she was at home. So she had to take the train from Manchester to London with uncertainty that I could be in a very difficult position, a very difficult circumstance. So he was more of a just hoping that for the best. So yeah, she did amazing in that time, because I think anybody else in that circumstance would find it very difficult.
Mm-hmm. And how was sort of, we call them the football family, but how do you feel was, was the FA, the Premier League, the PFA, friends, ex-players, do you feel that they were all there, they were supportive, or do you think actually there's work to be done in that sort of situation when things like this
happen? I mean, there was a support for a certain period of time. Once everything died down, everybody go back to the normality, and the normality come back in. There was a lot of issue that went behind the scene where, there was my contract regarding to Bolton, because I still had 2.5 years left in my contract. So there was a lot of financial stuff where had to be changed in many ways. Also has a change for the future for almost every single player now anyway, because of my accident, it needs to be dealt with. But at the end of the day, we came with a better conclusion, which I'm very happy about. And I said, I don't have no regrets.
Yeah.
I don't have no hard feelings towards football. It just happened that my career was cut short for something that I didn't have control of. That's it.
Do you think that there needs to be more support for players that potentially have their careers cut short or struggle afterwards? I mean, I was just reading, I think this morning, about Gaza again being sort of in trouble, and he's living with his agent and stuff like that for different reasons. But do you think that footballers need to have more help, because it's sometimes it a career can be cut short, and it can be a very lonely place because you've been in the dressing room with.
Yeah, I mean, listen. If I ask you, and I'm asking this question, what's the average playing career?
I don't know. You're going to probably surprise me, but 10, 12 years?
And that's wrong. Average playing career is 7 years. So if you start playing, if you're breaking the first team when you're 18, by the time you're 25, you won't be the same person again. So, and by the time you're 26, you won't be getting a 4-year contract anymore. It'll be probably 2 years after 2 years. And the way the game is evolved and how fast everything is moved on, you know, if you don't keep up with the pace of the game, you're probably losing out. There's only going to be one Ryan Giggs who plays to 40. There's only going to be one James Milner. Besides that, I don't see current generation playing to the 40. To have that hunger, the desire to be able to maintain your body, your health, to be able to play to as long as you can, that don't happen anymore. You know, so that on that side, it's very important to make sure that you educate yourself, know as much as you can, because once your career is done, it's done. If you don't want to get back into football, i.e. coaching and educate a young player, then you're going to have to find a 9-to-5 job like everybody else, you know? So for me, it was more just educating myself. And as I said, I was fortunate enough that I played at decent levels, able to make a decent living. I was smart with my money. But it doesn't happen to everybody, especially the guys who play in the Championship, League One, League Two. The money is not like the money that you earn in the Premier League. So at some point, you're going to have to get back on board and start working on things, you know? So for me, as I always said to young players and current players, you need to be able to have a plan B, because if plan A doesn't go to plan, we need to fall into plan B.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We had a question from Sean on the chat, and he just said, can Fabrice still exercise since recovery, or can you exercise fully, maybe not fully, but a little bit?
I do exercise. I don't go full pace like if I was want to play football, but I do exercise. I try to look after myself the best as I can. So, yeah, I try to exercise, not as in a high intensity level like I would like to be, but obviously for health reasons, you have to be very mindful.
Yeah, cool. So moving on, I do want to ask you about Arsenal. I appreciate you work for Burnley. You wouldn't watch Arsenal every week. I totally get that. But you obviously work for someone who has worked with Mikel, you know, Vincent Kompany at Man City was obviously with Mikel. Have you ever asked Vincent about Mikel and what he was like and stuff? What's your sort of views on Mikel Arteta from maybe what you've heard?
Look at it from the outside. There's so much similarity between him and Vinny. Obviously, both of them work under Pep. There's so much in terms of how the setup, there's so much is that if you look at Arsenal backroom staff, Arsenal has a massive, huge backroom staff.
Yeah.
If you look at Burnley backroom staff is equally the same. They're into much detail. If you watch Burnley last year in the Championship, they just literally walked that league without even trying, you know. Yeah. And if you watch Arsenal this year, it's more of repetition. Gone the days where, when I was there, I can recall how Arsenal training session looked like. From looking at from video, Mikel training session is completely different. You if you look at how London Connolly is, how the pitch is set up, there's a lot of line, everything is being cut up. Again, if you go to Burnley training ground, it's almost the same. There's a lot of line, pitch cut up. So they've been told and brought the game in many ways. And the game has evolved. And I think when you watch Arsenal, Mikel needed time, needed investment.
Yeah.
The people upstairs backed him. They believe in him. I think his saving grace was winning the FA Cup, helped a lot, you know. And they believe in the process. You know, and we can see it's coming to fruition as we speak. Last season came close, but not close enough. This season, looking more and more, looking very, very promising. Besides, you've got City and Liverpool, they're going for the same price as well.
Yeah. Are there any players in particular at Arsenal that you've been impressed with this season?
I think everybody speaks the volume of this young man. I think, you know, he's a Haaland boy. I'm more for anybody that comes through that door. Saka, I love the kid. He just looked like he's just a nice kid. You know, when you watch him play, you watch my only worry is that I don't want him to get burned out. Yeah. That's my only concern. I'm worried that he's the only go-to person. He plays so many games, but he's such a good footballer at the same time. Yeah. You know, it's very hard to deny that. You know, it's a very, very good footballer. I love Saka.
And what about the midfield, obviously, looking at your position? I mean, Declan Rice.
I think the addition of Declan Rice to the team made a massive difference. He has he really added something special into the Arsenal, and I think that was probably the missing puzzle. You know, you have Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka. They were good, but I think what Declan had is being a Premier League player for quite a while, kind of knew the league inside out, being a London boy, know the place, know how the thing works, and he's very, very, very fit, very consistency. I think that's one of the biggest X factor I also have this season.
And ultimately, who's going to win the league? If you had a crystal ball.
It's a difficult one because when you look at how the two teams up north are going about the business, and my worry with Arsenal that it just has a squad. If Martinelli's tired, can Martinelli play? And anybody else can come and make a difference? If Saka's tired, can anybody come up step and make a difference? That's my only concern. I think it's not just me, but for every Arsenal fan, where Mikel doesn't really switch and give other people opportunity. You know, it's my worry that if one of those lads go injured, then we screw here, you know?
In trouble. Yeah. Tim, do you have a question?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to sort of come back to the life-changing issue that you for Brace. But what I was interested in is, do you think enough has happened in football since on this issue? So, for instance, do I recall that the FA and the government made it a requirement that there was a defibrillator at every community club and grassroots? Have you yourself been involved in any work with the PFA or awareness of the campaign? I'd be, you know, when things like what happened to you occur, they're also an opportunity to make wider change, aren't they, and improve it for everybody?
Yeah, no, what has happened over the years is that the FA has funded different community centres to be able to have a defibrillator. And also, it is mandatory to have a defibrillator. And the most important thing that the FA made is that we need to teach kids, coaches, how to do CPR. You know, when you go to your FA first aid emergency courses, CPR is one of the biggest things that they definitely talk about. And obviously, they use me as an example and everything else. So for me, the FA has gone about it in the right way of making sure to raise awareness of the importance of doing CPR and also having access to a defibrillator will always have a massive impact on how a patient can recover from sudden cardiac arrest.
Yeah, thank you.
No, it's all.
And there has been a couple more questions. There's one from David who said, so future ambition, but what's your actual role at Burnley at the moment? And then also for you, what's the future? What do you want to be a manager one day?
My actual role right now, I coach under 15, and I am an assistant for the under 21. So I work for the both end of the scale.
Fine. And then future, do you want to remain a coach? Do you want to become an assistant, a manager one day? What's the?
I mean, if an opportunity presents itself, I think it's very hard to say no to. I think any player or even yourself, if Mikel call you today, say come on, let's go. I'm sure you say come on, Mikel. Let's give it a go. Why not?
I will leave this call now to go.
There you go. So I'm not different to anybody, and I think if the opportunity come around in the right way, I'm sure I'll be able to assess the whole situation. But you want to give it a go and see how, you know, challenge yourself against all the top guys out there, really.
Would you go abroad to work or are you settled in England or are you just...
Well, at this present moment, I'm settled right now because I've got four children. Three of them all play football. Two of them are Man City. So it's quite hard to be able to say, come on, let's get out. And obviously, I have to be mindful of what the kids are doing at the moment.
Yeah, and what have you thought about the sort of academies now to your day? So obviously you were in the academy, 20, 25 years ago. Now, how have they changed?
There's not many good coaches about.
Okay, so there's a lack of.
I find it, and this is from like an ex-player. I find that you get a lot of guys who read the game from book, who coaches kids, and they can't demo what they're talking about. They can talk to the, they can talk a good game,
yeah.
Because kids need to be related to who's coaching them, and I find that more and more academy, more expert don't want to get involved to academy, maybe because there's a lot of policy that's involved with it. Yeah. But we are dying of good coaches, ex-player who want to love the game, who want to coach the kids and show them, share experience, share knowledge, demo session, and just give them something they look forward to, you know, and there's not many of them about.
And do you see that changing, or what needs to happen for that to change?
I think it's not changing, it's actually getting worse.
Okay.
Because guys who play the game, they want to get into the game. But the guys that are the top of the league, they're the one controlling the move on everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very difficult.
What about sort of even like refereeing and stuff like that? Do you think the standard has got worse? Is the same? Is better? Do you think ever see that changing?
That's another conversation, isn't it? Because obviously you go far, who also play a major role.
Yeah.
That's come into the game, and has that helped anybody? Doubt it. You know.
What's your view on VAR? If you could get rid of it, change it, use it, carry it, stick with it.
You're giving technology the power to control everything.
Mm.
So I don't see, you know, it's almost like a, you know, prior to I think couple of months ago, it was every single week. Via this, via that. So, is it getting any better? I'm not sure.
You know, one of the topics I do want to talk about, and it's quite close to my heart, and we've at the Arsenal Supporters Trust, we've done a lot of work on it, but it's around sort of online abuse generally, racism, stuff like that. You know, I guess it's an open question. Have you suffered from racism in football? If you have, how have you dealt with it? Is there any examples you remember that have just stuck with you?
I always remember when we went to Slovakia with England under 21. I mean, this is go back years ago.
Yeah.
And it was just the hostile atmosphere and the hoo-hoo-ha, all that kind of stuff. That was the first and the last time I was able to witness that kind of behavior towards players, you know, and didn't sit particularly well with me. And I never really liked it as well.
So top right, is that a picture of you in an Arsenal shirt?
This one here?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll give you a little tour. So you have this one here. Can you see it?
Yeah.
This was the first game that was played in the Emery.
Dennis Bergkamp's testimonial, I can see the thing.
There you go, thank you. This one here.
Yeah. Oh, Maradona.
Yeah, this was my first trip to the first team Amsterdam Arena tournament.
Yeah.
That Arsenal used to go to.
Wow.
Yeah. This one here.
Is it Johan?
No.
Oh, Patrick Vieira, sorry.
So this was me with Arsenal Academy to Vieira's tournament in Monaco.
Okay.
And he's my idol.
Yeah, okay. I was just trying to guess who the others were.
Oh, that one? Tevez.
Oh, Tevez, top left. Yeah. Right. And the one below Tevez?
And the one below was me versus Frank Lampard.
Oh, Lampard, okay.
And the other one was my first Premier League goal.
Okay.
And you
mentioned Patrick Vieira was an idol. I mean, what was it about him and what was so special? Because I think he's a lot of people's idol, probably watching this call.
I think Patrick just had this charisma about him where you have to gravitate by that. You know, his presence in the change room, his presence in the training ground, just the way he went about his business, you know. I don't think I don't think they will make players like Patrick anymore.
Yeah.
In this modern game, never again. I doubt it.
Did you know interaction with Thierry or Robert Pires or any of those of players?
I know Thierry, between Thierry speak a lot. I speak to Patrick a lot, you know. Even when Patrick was at City, me and Patrick used to go for breakfast a lot. But I think I was like, even like we go to talk, but I was still in awe of him.
Yeah.
I couldn't like, you know, sometimes you meet somebody who you idolize, but you almost like still like, oh my God, it's really him, you know, it's really him. Like many we have like conversation. So one day he told me, hey, come on, you know, it's me and you now, let's have a chat. And I literally had to snap myself out of it because I was just like, oh, it's Patrick, you know, so yeah.
Fair enough. Question from Mukhtar Khan. Hi, Fabrice. What's your happiest memory of your playing career, or maybe your favourite match?
One of my happiest memories was to make my first team debut for Arsenal. We played a Carling Cup. Played away at Sunderland. Robin scored. And I think, the whole journey from the training ground to up north and to the Stadium of Light, to just walking in the stadium and seeing your shirt, with your name on it, your number on it, and then you just, it's a hell of an experience there.
Just wanted to sort of take you back, because obviously when you put your phone to charge, it just about the sort of, you know, racism element and stuff. Do you think we do enough in football to kind of stop it? Or do you think we have to do more? What, you know, how far are we down the journey?
We can educate people in terms of racism, and we live in a multicultural society as we speak. And if I educate you, you can't have a better understanding about it. But if I don't, then you're just assuming what you think is right.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to educate a lot of people, young and old. Make it mandatory to respect people's religion, skin color, people, background, you know. And that's where it boils down to your upbringing, your knowledge of people's background, all that kind of stuff, you know. So it's important we just keep educating future generation, you know, the guys who pass, who's a little bit older, just remind them, you know, we live in a world where it's inclusion. Not like, you know, you have to cancel, you can't keep separate people anymore. So yeah, that's where we are right now.
Do you feel that you're scared that your kids will suffer for it, or you just think we'll see?
No, I brought up my kids to and expose them in different culture, different, you know, race, and they go to mixed school, and you want to expose kids to everything that you can, so that when they become an adult, if they find themselves in a situation where it doesn't look familiar to them, but because they've been exposed to them from a very young age, they're able to handle it much better.
Yeah.
You know, so it's for me as a parent, it's important to educate them. Also, when you have their friends come over, you go to speak to them, you show them that your background, how you go about business and stuff like that. So for me, I'm not worried about that. I just want to make sure that my kids are good enough and good people in a society.
And we've got a question on a similar sort of subject from Larry Shaw, and he says, what's your view on black managers at the top level, and can you ever see this changing? Because obviously at the moment there aren't many. Can you see it changing?
I think when you have an opportunity to become a manager, you really have to be prepared for a lot of things. And I think there is this leeway where a white account manager probably get more time on a shelf life than a black account manager. However, if I'm gonna get into that position, I need to be prepared as the best as I can, so that if I do well, it will affect the future generation in a positive way, you know? And if I do worse, it will affect them in a negative way. It's all about being an opportunity, but also, are you doing your work to be given opportunity? Do you have the badges that you need to do work? Do you have the qualification that you need to do work? It's all well and good to say, I've read the game. If you play the game, and if it is what you want, then there's the time that you need to spend to learn the trade the right way. And if the opportunity presents itself in front of you, you're preparing well enough to be able to take the opportunity in two hands. However, you've got to be in the right place at the right time. You've got to spend time out there learning the game, you know, learning the trade the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Just got a few more minutes now, last couple of minutes. So, you know, it's only right we end with Arsenal. I think you've spoken quite fondly about Arsenal. You know, your favourite memory was Arsenal. You talked about the academy. You said we a couple of times when we talked about Arsenal too. You know, one day, if you could, you know, get to Arsenal somewhere, would you want to? Would you?
You know, honestly speaking, if I didn't live up north,
yeah,
I would be working for Arsenal.
Right.
I've had job opportunity to work, but I said to them, I can't move my family. They're all settled. They're all settled up here. But if I live down south, not a problem, not a chance. Not a problem in the world that I can walk in tomorrow and say, hey, here I am now. Right. Where do I start? So
maybe when they're a bit older then.
Maybe.
And you said you're visiting the Emirates for the first time in a little while on Saturday, but taking you back to that Dennis Bergkamp testimonial, first game at Emirates, how was that like? Because even for fans, it was so exciting. It was a new era. How was it for you?
We were the first people to place that grass. You know, it was Ajax Best 11, it was a special show with Dennis. You know skill that he did against Newcastle, the turn.
Yeah.
So there was a graffiti of it in front of the shirt. Everybody have one. Again, that was just a mind blowing experience. Just you have to be there to experience it all. You know, so
I've still got my program from the game. You see.
Oh wow! Yeah. It's so you know, see the program on the top left hand side. That signature.
Yeah,
that one, that's on everybody's shirt. Everyone's shirt.
Yeah.
And then to be able to be part of that, you know, to go into the Ajax change room, the name that was in that change room. we all queued up like kids just to get our shirt signed. That's how, you know, how big it was, you know. So for me, I'll never ever forget that experience. Never.
Yeah.
You know. If you look at the match program and look at the name that was in that day involved,
that's what I'm looking at. It's
Seedorf, Overmars, Van der Vaart. There was big names there.
Must have been an amazing day. So Saturday's the first time you're going back for a while. You're excited? Yeah. Do you think Arsenal will obviously kind of have to win to keep going, really? But I mean, what also brings you back? Is it just an opportunity, or is it
because my Burnley team play on Friday evening, so I was like, I'm gonna come watch Arsenal on Saturday, and I'm looking forward to it because you know, City and Liverpool, one of them had to drop a point on the weekend, so it's a great opportunity for Arsenal. And my worry is that it just depends which type of Arsenal turn up.
Yeah.
And because obviously playing Saturday 5:30, it can go both ways. You can either turn up and have a good game or let the occasion get on top of you. I don't think Mikel will allow that. I think Mikel kind of know his squad well enough to prep them to his best ability to make sure I can predict that Arsenal will play on the front four. From the moment the game starts, Arsenal will jump off, will literally put pressure on Brentford and try to score early goal and play from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You had a sort of comment from Sean who says he remembers Fabrice scoring for Bolton at the Emirates in 2000.
Yes, I did.
League Cup. Did you celebrate or did you kind of do that thing when they just don't celebrate?
I think I did celebrate a little bit. Yeah, I think I celebrated. Yes, I did.
Yeah, we forgive you.
Yes, we
forgive you. But anyway, Fabrice, we're nearly at time now, 9:15. So I want to sort of thank you for talking to us. You probably talked about, you know, the incident so many times, but it can't be easy. Even now, it probably can't be easy talking about it. So we do thank you for talking about it so openly.
No problem at all. I think for me, I just shared a lot with the whole situation. You know, to be able to, you know, still be here after this, after so many years, that I said many people never had this opportunity to still be alive after they had my accident. I'm grateful. I'm okay. I enjoy life like anybody else. And for me, just take every day as it comes now and make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got, when we said we were doing this, we got lots of kind of messages from members and Arsenal fans just saying actually that it's kind of, you know, you, I guess because of what you've been through, but because you started at Arsenal, everyone does feel that little bit of connection with you, and people were excited to kind of hear from you and stuff. So I hope you know that, you know, you're very popular still with Arsenal fans.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, when they was asked to do it, so I have no qualm doing it. I think anything that's involved Arsenal, I'm fully aware of, and I'm also want to give the best, because the club was always good to me when I was playing for them. When I stopped playing for them during my accident, so I have a great fan for Arsenal.
Perfect. Well, that's the perfect place to leave it, I think. For me, thank you so much from me, from Tim, my colleague, and the rest of the Arsenal Sports Trust and our members. Thank you for giving up your evening. Best of luck for the rest of the season at Burnley as well. Hope, you know, you never know. As you said, you have to be optimistic. But more importantly, I hope the Arsenal entertain you on Saturday at 5:30, because if you're happy, we'll be happy too that evening.
No worries, though. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Speak
soon.
Thank you, guys.
See you later. Yeah. Bye.
And that was Fabrice. Just get Tim back on just to kind of close this off if he's still around. Yeah, that was good, Tim, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was very interesting and enjoyable. And let's hope he has a good night. We all have a good night on Saturday.
Absolutely. So we'll be back on the, 20th of March with Rob Draper. Invites out soon. And there'll be a recording for this out as well for anyone that joined halfway, I guess.
And do let us have your thoughts on ticketing.
Perfect. Right, that's it from us.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Up the Arsenal. Take care.